Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Tired of losing weight only to gain it all back? The weight loss experts at SlimRank.com have done the research. SlimRank.com ranks the safest, most effective GLP-1 programs that get and keep the weight off for good. Stop watching the scale go up and down. Go to SlimRank.com and pick America's number one weight loss program today. SlimRank.com. That's SlimRank.com. Your dream body is just a few months away. SlimRank.com.
As if we needed an excuse to invite Ron Howard back onto Soundtracking. The latest installment of the Star Wars franchise is a pretty darn good one. Solo, a Star Wars story, speaks for itself, providing the backstory to one of cinema's most lovable rogues. Though Ron was brought onto the project late, he approached his duties with the childish enthusiasm of a man who went to see the original twice on the same day on its opening weekend back in 1977. In my view, the results are magical, offering a different tone and personality than we've seen before. It really is a fantastic experience. Now, as ever with the Star Wars movies, music is as central to the experience as the narrative, characterization and special effects. In this instance, John Powell provided the score, though John Williams not only gave him his blessing, but also composed an all-new theme for Han. Ron, welcome back to Soundtrack, and thank you for coming back for a pleasure. Second visit.
I enjoy it. I enjoy talking about it.
Congratulations on Solo.
Thank you.
Had the absolute genuine pleasure of seeing it yesterday.
Thank you.
And it was a real physical experience. I've only watched films with an American audience in the States a few times, but that's what it felt like in terms of the enthusiasm of the crowd.
How great.
And how involved they were in reacting to things.
Well, thank you. These, you know, there's something very special, of course, about Star Wars and Star Wars fans and the excitement that we feel. It's almost like sports in a way.
Yeah.
You know, but with the different kinds of stories, you have slightly different tones.
Yeah.
This one, because it's young, it's not a war story. It doesn't involve kind of like the somber seriousness of the religion of the Force.
Yeah.
It's about yearning and this sort of reckless drive to be free. And it's young Han Solo, and he's a bit of a rascal. So there's a very playful side to this movie that's a little different from some of the recent ones that have been a bit more somber.
Yeah.
But this one is just got a kind of young energy around it, and I really enjoyed staging those scenes with that in mind.
There was a lot of laughter in the cinema. There was a lot of whoops for certain moments as well. Musically, there was a couple of moments.
Good. I like that description.
Real guttural, like, amazing. This is a project that you came in at a certain point. And I don't know how much was there in terms of the music. And John Powell obviously did the music, who we listened to nonstop. Actually, my kids, who are 5 and 10, because they adore the How to Train Your Dragon films. We have the soundtrack, his soundtrack's on in the car, because he does a wonderful job.
Well, when I came on board, there had been no decisions, but John Powell had been lined up to do the music. He'd been suggested, in fact, by John Williams, who couldn't do the whole movie, but he did commit to contributing a new theme specifically for Han Solo.
Oh, wow.
We'll be right back. so, assuming he said that John Powell didn't mind that, John was begging him to do it and so excited about it. So this is an interesting sort of blend of elements of the themes we've heard a lot. This beautiful new theme from John Williams. And it was truly inspiring to see this man in his 80s sit down, see the movie. He said, wow, it's swashbuckling, but it's very soulful also.
Yeah.
And he wrote a beautiful piece of music that could be used in both sort of tones.
Yeah.
And then John Powell, brilliant composer in his own right, somebody I've long wanted to work with, creating new themes for other characters, including a Chewbacca theme. You know, this movie has a little bit of a Western feel and a kind of a 70s feel. So there's some guitar stuff in there. It's never been in a Star Wars score. There is a feeling of a kind of a pulsing, driving, that sort of 70s Western action adventure feel, but still very appropriate, very consistent with, you know, the kind of relationship an audience has with music and when they go to a Star Wars movie. I think it's a great soundtrack. I think he did a wonderful job. I'm really grateful for it. We have a big train heist sequence. Mm-hmm. It has a very Western feel. I love the score that John Powell created for that. And we talked a lot about these kind of hard-boiled Western heist movies.
Yeah.
Henry Mancini wrote some of these scores. Bernstein wrote some of these scores. And you can feel echoes of that in what John has created for the train heist. We'll be right back.
it's just perfectly paced with, like you say, those kind of nods to particular themes that we know and love, but also this wonderful new soundscape. And I noticed today someone referencing, and you took it really brilliantly, which I'm glad, was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And that was a great reference.
I love that.
Yeah.
That was a Twitter reference,
yeah.
Somebody. And they said Han and Chewbacca were kind of like the new Butch and Sundance. And I, they're not that far off. And of course, again, Butch and Sundance is another example of something that's grounded in reality. Mm. The stakes are real. It's life and death. But there's a kind of a humanity and humor in and around that drama. Mm. And we never wanted this movie to be, it's not a comedy. It's not about jokes. But there's an energy, a youthfulness, and the nature of these characters, whether it's Lando's wit, a new character, L3, who's rather biting,
yeah.
A droid with a real attitude, created by Phoebe, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and she's amazing. Or this Han-Chewie relationship, which it is a little like Butch and Sundance. Hilarious.
Was Phoebe physically there? And was
yes.
It, okay, great.
Phoebe was always physically there.
Yeah.
And all the body language, all the movement, it was her. So
yeah.
she was basically wearing a costume, a robot costume,
yeah.
But also with a green suit, so
yeah.
They could ultimately remove, you know, all vestiges of humanity, and
yeah.
but the attitude was all Phoebe and body language and things like that. She was great, and a lot of this movie is about trying to break the bonds of oppression.
Yeah,
and John Powell wrote a kind of a freedom theme, and in and around Phoebe's character L3, he plays it. And they're trying to escape, and there's this kind of crazy, hilarious rebellion, a droid rebellion at one point that factors into the plot. But he plays it, and it's stirring.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a lot of what John Powell brought to it. And he's a terrific composer, which is why John Williams nominated mm-hmm. him for the job.
Writing, you know, John writing the score and Larry and his son, John writing the script as well. And, you know, Larry has this incredible history with Star Wars. You know, he wrote Empire and Jedi, I think.
Well, this is the fourth time he's written for the Han Solo character.
Wow.
He also wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a little bit of a cousin to Raiders of the Lost Ark, because if you think about it, this is not an ensemble story. It's not a war story.
Yeah.
It's a single adventure with a character in the middle who is a little haphazard, sometimes makes some wrong-headed decisions and gets himself into trouble. And John and Larry Kazan, they love writing that kind of character who kind of has a heart and a soul despite himself, and he gets himself into predicaments.
Yeah.
And it's fun to see him work his way out.
I've got to tell everyone you're wearing a great cap today, which has a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It's the best hat ever.
It is a pretty great hat.
It's okay.
And I'm honored to actually feel it's okay to wear it.
And with that iconic start to these films, to this world, you know, we normally have the crawl with the big anthem, and we don't have that with this film.
Kathy Kennedy and Lucasfilm has tried to separate the Skywalker family saga movies with the traditional crawl from these new sort of branches of the galaxy that they're planning to explore. I really applaud their courage, because these movies are risky. They're still expensive. While they know there's an audience curiosity, they're all different. They're taking different tones. This is a different tone than Rogue One, but both are different than the regular saga movies in subtle ways, which means they're going to be controversial and stir up, you know, conversation. But it's so ambitious. What's great about it is that they're not trying to manufacture Star Wars stories. They're not trying to cash in. They're just trying to expand and explore.
And tell the best stories.
And find the great stories using these characters, using this strange cocktail of aliens and droids and human beings struggling together for freedom that George Lucas created all those years ago. So I really was very impressed by the passion that I found within the core group that is making the Star Wars galaxy their lives and careers right now.
I think it makes the moments later on in the film where you do hear familiar things. I'm not going to give anything away for anyone. It makes it even more powerful, I think.
Good.
You don't have that thing at the start.
Pardon the pun, music to my ears. because starting with the Kasdans, especially John, the younger of the Kasdans, is an absolute Star Wars nerd, total committed fan, you know.
Yeah.
But so are some of the men and women in the Lucasfilm story group.
Yeah.
You know, they're just dedicated to the possibilities, the entertainment values, mm-hmm. but also the thematic values. And I think it's always been that combination of themes that really resonate with us on a core level, on a most human level, and then also this fun action and humor and these relationships that are so winning.
There was two things I was really looking out for as well, which are your almost kind of like your good luck charms, your lovely wife.
Yes.
I couldn't find her, but I found your brother.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I love working with my brother Clint, and I had a nice, juicy, perfect role for him. He had a blast doing it. My Cheryl, that goes back to when we were 17 years old, and it was the first Super 8 movie that I entered in a contest. I came in second, which meant a lot to me. And she was in it, and we had just started dating. We had just met, and we've been together all these years, and she's been in everything. She doesn't particularly enjoy it, I'll be honest. She's kind of an introvert, and she's a writer, and doesn't necessarily want the attention. But she knows I'm superstitious about it. And in fact, the scene where she was really, you know, sort of prominently in the movie got cut out. I cut it out.
Oh, awkward.
And when the ILM people... found out that I'd taken my good luck charm out. And I was saying, yeah, but I don't really believe in superstition. It's okay. It's whatever the movie needs. They said,
as you were sweating.
They said, we do believe in it. We will green screen her in. So Whoa. They literally, we shot her in front of a green screen and they placed her in the background. And my rule
That's
is,
amazing.
If we know where to look, we can see her. It's sort of where's Waldo?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's not like people need to notice
yeah.
Okay, there we go. You know, so she's in there.
I love that they did that.
She's in the spaceport.
Okay. I'm going to take my... That was, I think, this is the most guilty I felt as a parent yesterday when I was taking my kids to school. They're 5 and 10, two boys, and they love the world. They love it. And they were like, what are you doing today, Mom? And I was like, I might be going to see Solo. They were like, what? Without us? I'm going to recce it. I'm going to make sure that it's okay for you.
You'll have to bring him back.
And oh, my God, yeah, at least once.
Already
at least once.
Already I can tell that it's a, you know, well, this sounds like I'm shilling for the movie, but it is dense in its own way, and people like seeing it a second time.
Oh,
they get
I
more
can't
out
wait.
Of it.
I really can't wait. I mean, you have this wonderful history with George Lucas, you know, going back to American Graffiti. I was listening to some lovely interviews with you where you talked about, you know, he was this maverick young filmmaker and he talked to you about this idea he had for, you know, for this story about this boy and this world.
Yeah. And he said, well, it's kind of like a Flash Gordon movie, which is the sort of the cheesiest of the B movies at that time.
I love Flash Gordon. Gordon's said, alive?
But he said, I don't want it to be where the spaceship is obviously on wires kind of bouncing along in front of a painted backdrop of stars. You know, he says, I want to use the Stanley Kubrick level special effects, but with an adventure movie. He says, and I want the spaceships to go fast. And that's about all he said about it. And I admit, I didn't necessarily think it was a great idea, but I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
At that time, sci-fi was really kind of corny, and he elevated it by using state-of-the-art technology, John Williams' amazing score.
Yeah.
And again, I think he sort of was inventing this combination of entertainment values that are, you know, funny, and yet you actually care about the stakes.
Yeah.
It's unique. I don't think another filmmaker could come along today and try to come up with that particular blend of that sort of earnest, honest, committed characters and that humor and those thematic ideas and that style of action, blend them together. I don't think people would be comfortable with it. Mm. But I think that's one of the things that Star Wars has earned, is kind of the right to give people this unique blend of entertainment values.
And you went to see it on its opening...
Opening weekend.
Yeah.
Cheryl and I went to the Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard to a 10 a.m. show because I was doing Happy Days at that time. We shot on Friday nights, so I couldn't go Friday. First thing in the morning, an early morning show, 10 o'clock, and we were just blown away by it. And we left, and there were two massively long lines in front of the Chinese Theater. And we knew it would be 2 hours to get back in. And I said, do you want to see it again? And Cheryl said, yeah. And we got back in line and saw it, waited 2 hours and saw it again that day. I'll never forget it.
Have you done that with any other film?
I don't think I ever have seen it twice in the same day. I've seen movies more than once
stood
in long lines.
But not straight after you've come out.
No. It shows you the kind of impact it really had on moviegoers from the beginning.
Last time we spoke, we delved into your incredible body of work and some of the wonderful composers that you work with, and we talked quite a lot about James Horner and how when you you know, when you spoke to him originally about working on Cocoon, and he came to the table almost like a screenwriter, you know, and that was the way that he talked to you about how he saw the score. I imagine it's very different with every composer that you work with, that they have their process, or they have the way that they communicate with you, their vision or their ear for the picture.
Well, the best composers are all very good storytellers. And if you have a conversation with Hans Zimmer about the movie, it's not just about the music. You know, he'll contribute ideas. In fact, when John Powell saw a first long cut of Solo, he had a couple of very good creative ideas that had nothing to do with music whatsoever. They were storytelling ideas that the editor, Pietro Scalia, and I immediately adopted. And we did some rewrites and went back and reshot something. And it was all, and I'm very grateful for, all inspired by John Powell's idea and his reaction to the movie. These people are just great storytellers and can be fantastic contributors to the overall process. I love to know, whenever possible, who the composer is going to be, you know, even before you're shooting.
Yeah.
And try to get the composer to the set and make that composer a part of the process.
It's such a great example of your collaborative approach to your work, in terms of that, you know, you're sat there with your editor working on your movie, and you're very open to taking comments from your composer that will, you know, that will incur changes on your film. That's an amazingly open and collaborative approach. Is that always how you've approached filmmaking?
Well, when I was younger, I was scared of that because I was afraid I'd be railroaded or that people wouldn't respect me, and so I was a little more guarded. But as I became more and more experienced and had more confidence, it was easier for me to benefit from the brilliance of the people around me and still maintain creative control over the project, because I would also have the confidence to say, I hear you, but I don't quite see it that way.
Yeah.
And everyone would accept it because they also would know that I'm excited to say yes. Talking earlier about Lauren Balfe, who I'd worked with through Hans Zimmer, and then we were very lucky to have him be the composer on Genius.
Yeah.
And I directed the first episode of Einstein, and I wasn't able to direct any of the Picassos with Antonio Banderas that are airing now. But Lauren came in, and you know, and once again, really understood the psychology of Picasso and the themes of this story, and he didn't just copy what he had done brilliantly the season before on Einstein.
Yeah.
You know, he created something that was entirely appropriate for Pablo Picasso. And next we're doing Mary Shelley, and I hope Lauren will be available for that, because you know, what will he do with Frankenstein?
Oh wow, that's incredibly exciting. Yeah.
Thank you.
must be wonderful for a composer, though, to have that luxury of, you know, it's not just 2 hours of a character of a production, it's a whole series of a production. Yeah.
Well, storytellers, filmmakers, most of us are really excited by this discovery that this long-form approach to stories can still be very, very cinematic. And it's just wonderful to be able to delve into the details of these stories. Especially when you're dealing with real life events, it's often so frustrating what you have to leave out. And it's always been a difficult, limiting factor that, you know, you had to make this for a single sitting viewership. And now, you know, this is this other possibility that really isn't a cinematic compromise at all. It's mm-hmm. expansive in terms of the artistry of the medium and what storytellers can do with it. So it doesn't take away from movies. They're so powerful. And sometimes it's just the thing you want, you know, is to have a story that begins and ends and you've experienced it and felt it and mm-hmm. you don't have to dedicate 10 hours or more to grasping that story. And that's its own, you know, really potent, powerful, fun format.
Yeah.
But I keep exploring. I keep taking chances. I'm very pleased with the way Solo worked out, but it was a bit of a reckless experiment. Mm-hmm. I came in late and I thought, well, this would be a really fun, interesting creative challenge. Well, yeah. I wasn't sure it would be fun. It turned out to be fun. I knew it would be, I'd learn something, and it would be a brand new kind of experience for me. But I did the same thing with the Beatles documentary.
Which was great. Sort
of threw myself into that
yeah.
and realized, oh my Lord, this is not just a documentary. This is the Beatles. Yeah. People are really, they're really going to, you know, sharpen their pencils and take notes carefully when they watch this.
Well, that was actually one of the things I wanted to ask you with Solo movie is you didn't have to do it. Why did you want to do it?
It honestly was a kind of an adventure mm-hmm. and an opportunity and a chance to play in that sandbox, learn what I could learn from it. State of the art, everything in terms of world creation, state of the art, visual effects. Mm-hmm. I knew that. The thing that surprised me the most was how interesting and fun it was to stage this kind of action. Because I've mostly been doing, you know, very realistic action, like Heart of the Sea
yeah.
or Rush, you yeah. know, where it's intense.
Apollo 13.
But very much based in trying to let the audience feel what it might be like to be in one of these action circumstances.
Yeah.
Here, it's about play. It's about imagination. It's about big feelings. And fun to make a movie that aims first and foremost to entertain in the most escapist, immersive ways.
Yeah.
And it'd been a long time, maybe going back to The Grinch, that I'd done a movie that was that aggressively playful. And I enjoyed it.
I'm a driver, and I'm a flyer. I waited a long time for a shot like this.
What do you think? Well, what do you know?
You got a line on a ship?
Yeah, I know a guy. He's the best smuggler around.
I heard a story about you. I was wondering if it's true.
Everything you've heard about me is true.
L3!
Let go of the mean man's face.
Hey, with these guns.
If you come with us, you're in this life for good.
You might want to buckle up, baby.
Talking about playful, before we go, I can't not mention Arrested Development.
Yes. Oh,
yeah, it's back. It's another one of those.
Mitch Hurwitz and his cohort, constant cohort, Jim Vallelet, and the cast, you know, and Will Arnett contributes sometimes as a writer. Michael Cera often contributes. Mm-hmm. Jason Bateman is an incredible talent.
Yeah.
Often contributes. And they've all become such superstars in the comedy world that it's sort of impossible to get them together, and yet they all rally for Arrested Development yeah. and rally for Mitch Hurwitz, and I'm really thrilled. You know, I love being the uncredited narrator,
the uncredited but extremely well known.
But it's you know, it's a good sign when you're doing the narration and you're having a hard time keeping a straight face and not laughing. Yeah.
We had the Russo brothers on the show a couple of weeks ago, and we talked to them about it as well. Yeah, and it was great to chat to them about, you know, way back.
Well, what a great career they're having. Yeah. And again, they're very diverse. Mm-hmm. And they're just going to you know, they're gonna keep going as directors and producers, doing really interesting stuff.
I loved I heard you talk about Arrested Development when it first started, and the kind of pilot was put out there in front of test audiences, and you were the thing that everybody came back and said, love the narrator.
Well,
you scored the highest on the test.
It was just temp narration. I wasn't expecting to get a full time job out of it, I still haven't really gotten a raise. Everybody else seems
really?
To get raises, but the narrator doesn't get a raise. I don't
you
know.
You need to sort that out.
Well, when the narrator's also a producer, I think maybe it works that way.
Ron, thank you for your time once again. Real, real pleasure. And huge congratulations on Solo.
I'm so glad you had fun with it and liked it.
Yeah, I can't wait to go again.
Always fun to talk music and film and television with you.
Thank you. From the score to Solo, A Star Wars Story, that's the unconventional Chicken in the Pot, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Ron Howard. My huge thanks to Ron for taking the time to talk to us a second time round. He really is an absolute delight to spend time with. Solo is on general release around the world now and really is well worth seeing. You can catch up with all of our previous episodes via edithbowman.com, including my previous chat with Ron and Rogue One and Last Jedi directors Gareth Edwards and Ryan Johnson. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And do please subscribe and rate us via your preferred podcast provider. Now, as you know, we here at Soundtracking like to get out and about too. And this June, Mowat and Shandon is bringing the party back to London with the opening of Mowat Summer House, a unique concept blending a private members club with Mowat and Shandon's renowned spirit of generosity. Summer House will open its doors from Friday, June 8th to Sunday, June 10th, with a day-to-night lineup of cultural events, everything from acoustic performances and DJ sets, supper clubs from renowned chefs, poetry readings, and even live podcasts from us. Absolutely anyone can register for tickets, so be sure to get in quickly before they're all booked up. Now, we're going to be part of Saturday's brilliant lineup on early at 11:30 a.m. And for full information and to sign up for complimentary membership, please visit www.mowatsummerhouse.com. Now, we're taking a break for 1 week from the regular podcast, but have loads of great guests lined up, including another returning guest in J.A. Bayona, composer Daniel Pemberton and writer-director, the fabulous Clara Bernard. Back in 2 weeks then. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp, Now, Spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Tired of losing weight only to gain it all back? The weight loss experts at slimrank.com have done the research. SlimRank.com ranks the safest, most effective GLP-1 programs that get and keep the weight off for good. Stop watching the scale go up and down. Go to SlimRank.com and pick America's number one weight loss program today. SlimRank.com. That's SlimRank.com. Your dream body is just a few months away. SlimRank.com.